plate. This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I think that's horse crap. I think it's just because the computers are saying something different. I hate it. I'm old school. They signed me here for a reason to not go 3-4 innings and throw a certain amount of pitches. I throw a lot of pitches. I try to go as deep as I can. Not everybody's the same. Not everybody throws 98. So I don't know.
So we'll mark down Tanner Roark as being undecided as to whether or not analytics have a place in the game when he's pitching. The Blue Jays 7-2 losers to the New York Yankees last night. So much for the sweep. The story. What are you laughing at, Bart?
You.
Raise up. The story out of the night, though. The story out of the night, Kevin Barker, is, it was Tanner Roark. Now, look, we know that we've talked about the role that analytics is playing in a lot of the decisions that this team makes. To be polite, I think the folks around the Blue Jays front office refer to it as collaborative decision-making. And perhaps we'll learn more. I believe Mark Shapiro is joining Tim and Sid today, so perhaps we'll learn more about who actually is setting the lineup here. And that's the thing. Look, I understand, Kevin, that you are going to use analytics to set the lineup. Yeah. I understand it. The days are gone where the manager sits down and says, all right, I got a gut feeling this guy's going to turn the corner, even though he's 0-for-50, so I'm going to put him. And
yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
I also understand that analytics play a role in pitching matchups. I get all that. But I still believe that when it comes to in-game decision-making, especially with the starting pitcher, and look, the numbers third time through the order are gruesome. But there are times, unless I'm out of the game, if my starting pitcher has kept me in the game somehow, I might run him back out there. And last night was one of those nights. Now, I get the counter argument. You've got an off day, so you can basically blow your bullpen to pieces because you got an off day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, the idea that you got to worry about somebody's workload the next day, well, you don't have to worry about that because there's an off day. But I got to tell you, man, that situation last night, I'm at least letting him go back out there. I really am.
Yeah, if you're a coaching staff, you really can't win. If you run him back out there, he gives it up. The front office is chapped. If you take him out, the pitcher's chapped. So what do you do? I'll tell you what you do. 2020, because of who's writing your check, you take him out, and then you bring. It's all about
completely.
The guy you bring in. The guy you bring in does his job. Nobody's going to throw their hands in the air and go, "What are you doing?" Well, Stripling came in and gave up that little single to Voit, you know, through the shift. And then that changeup he gave up with a double down the left field line. Other than that, he was decent. He wasn't great, but he was okay. That's the issue. It's all about if you're going to take a guy out in the fourth inning. Now, Thomas Hatch, you don't want to overuse him. I know he got loose. He was going to come in if two outs, they needed that one out. He was going to come in and then pitch the next inning. The issue with him is you don't want to overuse him, because if you overuse him, he's done for 3 or 4 days in a row, and you want to maximize what he has down the stretch in all of these games. So you don't want to not be able to use him then. So that's the issue with what he's going through. But, you know, the flip side of that is you got to score more than two runs. That's it, too.
I think what people are referring to as well, and we've got 590-590 is a text line, and Andrew from Ottawa weighs in and says, quit the whining, man up, and focus on making the playoffs. And he said, you know, who is Tanner Roark? Does he even start game three of a best-of-three series? Here's the thing, though. We know that Taiwan Walker wasn't thrilled coming out of the game. And Taiwan Walker is going to start one of your playoff games. So that's my concern here, is you've got a guy who's already come out and said something publicly. And I wonder, Kevin, if the next time Hyunjin Ryu, we don't know how these guys are wired. He would not seem to be the type of guy who'd be upset. But I just wonder. It's clear from what Tanner Roark said that the pitchers have spoken to Pete Walker and to Charlie Montoyo about this. And you also get the impression that their hands are tied.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. They can talk all they want. A lot of these baseball teams are ran by smarter people, and most of the time, a lot of the time, the smart people get it right. And the numbers would say, third time through, Tanner Roark, hitters are hitting 353 with an OPS of over 1,000. When you're trying to win all of these games and you were trying to sweep a Yankees team who are almost out of it, you know, they weren't doing a whole lot of things right. The numbers say this is what you do. And when front offices are telling you that and they write the checks, this is the kind of thing that happens. This is what I said. The guy that comes in after that, that's the most important piece out of all of that. Stripling came in and gave it up, and that's why everybody's throwing their hands in the air, because it didn't work out for him. You know, the next time this happens, I would assume if it's not Walker or if it's not Ryu, if it's one of the other three guys, the other three guys are coming out of the game. That's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah. And I will say this. I will say this. At least they're consistent in that regard. You know, I will say that. The Jays, Charlie Montoyo, Pete Walker, they are consistent.
Sometimes it makes you scratch your head. Like last night, Roark gave up a home run on a fastball down the middle. The one to LeMahieu, that's a good hitter getting a halfway decent pitcher's pitch and hitting it out of ballpark where the ball flies. You know, a good hitter beats you. That's it. You know, the eye test tells you that the fastball's located a little bit better. His breaking stuff has a little bit more bite to it. You might squeeze another inning out of him. But what if he goes out there and gives it up? And then you got front offices throwing their hands in the air and yelling and screaming at a pitching coach and a manager, which, you know, it's worked so far. This is what they've been doing with all the other guys besides the two first guys. And it's going to continue to be this way. You know, for me, the lineup is a bigger issue because of who's not in it other than this.
Mm-hmm.
Tanner Roark so far hasn't been good. You can spin it and yell at it and say it any way you want to say it. He has not been good up until this point. You're paying a lot of money for four innings. That's basically what it comes down to. And down the stretch, you know, this is what you're going to get. You may want to think about an opener with him. That's, you know, maybe he's missing the front part of the lineup. You know, you can get deeper in a game. Maybe you're handing a ball to a guy in the sixth inning instead of the fourth inning. Maybe that would help out your bullpen, and you're getting to high leverage guys right out the gate that way, and you're able to miss a Stripling. You're able to keep Hatch where he should be. Those kind of things. You're not having to bring Merriweather in when you don't want to have to do that. Those kind of things. Now getting back Ken Giles, that's going to be huge, Jeff. Like, you know, with where the lineup's at, it will be a miracle for this team to finish second because of the lineup. Mm-hmm. How does the bullpen hold teams to two runs or less? Because that's basically what they're going to have to do here down the stretch. You know, the Orioles are going to score some runs. The Phillies are going to score some runs. The Mets are probably going to score some runs. That, you know, they got a little mojo now, the Mets. And they got Jacob DeGrom going. So that's going to be real tough to do that. Can that bullpen hold them down to two runs?
You're talking, of course, about Rowdy. We know now that Rowdy Tellez has a knee strain. And there was a tweet out there last night, and I cannot remember where it's from, but suggested that he might be done for the rest of the year. Now, keeping in mind that the rest of the year is... what?
17 games,
season,
I think.
17 games.
18 games.
I don't 17 know if that goes games. In the playoffs. But certainly you've got to think that if the Jays get Teoscar Hernandez or Rowdy Tellez back, it's probably going to be the end of the season or into the playoffs. And frankly, at this point, I think, Kevin, you almost plan on not having them. And then if you do get them, it's a luxury.
Yeah, Bo Bichette's a huge deal. He's going to have to hit the ground running. Can he do that? You know, he has a lot of moving parts. Is he going to be able to hit a fastball like he was? If anybody can do it, it's probably him. You know, Travis Shaw is going to have to step up. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to have to do something. Who guesses a slider off a guy left hand throws 100? That's a confusing. Yeah. Those are confusing at bats. I just don't understand. I really want to walk up to him if I could and ask him, why do you do that? Like, you're 21 years old. Get the foot down early. Get it ready to hit a fastball and then expand from there. The last night would tell you if you didn't know he was a guesser until that last at bat, you sure do now. He took two heaters right down the middle and swung as hard as he could on a slider. What's that tell you? So the approaches are going to have to get a lot better. Kevin Biggio is going to have to start expanding the strike zone a little bit with runners on base. When you don't have your lineup in there, run producers, guys that usually do one thing are going to have to do something else because of what's not there. And can they do that down the stretch? That's going to be the question, is can they do that? And can they stop doing stupid things on the bases like Randall Grichuk running, you know, trying to take second base down three runs with Gurriel Jr. at the plate? Sometimes it just makes you want to uncle a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one and I will say this too about Kevin Biggio. Your point is well made in that there are people around the organization. Look, everybody loves Kevin Biggio, and everybody loves his on-base percentage and all that, but there are people around the Blue Jays who will tell you he needs to do a little more damage early in counts.
Yeah, well,
especially, Kevin, if you're not going to have, and I'm not criticizing Kevin Biggio at all because, you know,
he's been great in the leadoff spot.
The guy's been great in the leadoff spot. So
sure,
this is not a criticism other than it is pointing out something that other people have suggested. And that is that when you don't have Tellez, you don't have Hernandez, you will get Bichette back. But when Guerrero's scuffling, you got to do a little more sometimes than simply draw a walk. You've got to do some damage.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. I'd like to see him do that a little bit. And that's not every at bat. That's not to say he has to do it every at bat.
Runners in scoring position, you know, later in the game, sure. Early in the game, it's okay to do exactly what he's been doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Work counts, walk, get on base, you know, be a little crazy on the bases, you know, control crazy, which is exactly what he's been doing. But when it matters, when you got first and second with two outs in the sixth inning, go up, look heater, you know, middle away, thigh high, and try to drive one out of the ballpark to left field. Do that. They're going to have him do something in the 17 games down the stretch. They don't have a choice. You know, where's the run producing going to come from? Again, it's just asking too much for guys to continue to do what they're doing out of the bullpen when you're getting what you're getting from the rotation. It's just too much. It really is.
My God, you'd almost think they're in last place.
Well, we were speaking the obvious here. Right, we're not trying to. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer. I'm just trying to look ahead here. And you know, how are they going to win these games? Now, who they're facing is going to help. You know, the Phillies aren't a great team. The Mets aren't a great team. They're going to face the best of the best when it comes to Jacob DeGrom. You're going to find out, Vladdy, how good your fruition of the gather is. You're going to find out real quick. Because that's easy cheese. Everything's coming out of the same slot. You're going to find out. So after that, though, you know, they're going to have to zone up. They're going to have to get balls elevated in the strike zone. They're going to have to start driving baseballs. Every at bat now, we talk about every pitch out of this bullpen matters the way it does. Well, now every pitch matters when you're a hitter. It really does. Let's see it.
I think it was Chris Black, one of our Blue Jay Central producers, who sent out a tweet about the number of fastballs that – The Yankees threw the Jays,
yeah.
And how, keep an eye on this. And you were the one very early when we resumed Baseball Central.
Mm-hmm.
And I would kind of look at you funny because I look at this team as a young team. You know, they had Bichette, they had a bunch of guys doing damage. And you said, This is a team that still has an issue with velocity. I'm going, well, Bark, look at the home runs they're hitting. And you were saying they still have an issue with elite velocity. Well, that word's gotten out. Because more and more teams are throwing fastballs now, aren't they?
Well, Davey Garcia did last night, didn't have a great fastball. I mean, he had life to it. You know, he's famous for the breaking ball. The breaking ball, is they say, is the best in their organization. He didn't even use it last night because he didn't really have to.
Yeah, you know, fastball slider changed.
Yeah, a lot of those fastballs weren't spotted up. Like, he wasn't, you know, always on the corner all the time. Some of those were in the meat of the plate, and they took a lot of them early in counts, which is – would tell you, again, I have no idea what's going on between their ears, but I know when I was a player and I was around people that were guessing off speed means they had real issues of hitting the fastball. That's ultimately what that comes down to. And then I brought up the Vladimir Guerrero thing in the ninth inning. I understand who's throwing and how hard he throws in Chapman, but that should tell you right there. I know how hard he throws. He throws a slider 30% of the time, which nobody can hit. Why am I looking for it? Sometimes it makes you scratch your head a little bit. That's all. But they're still in second place.
They're in second place.
They are.
But you know, I was watching the game yesterday, and I was texting with a friend of mine, and I do have them. And I was texting with a friend of mine, and
your only one.
No. Thank God. But he made the point that this team is becoming as good as they are, and this guy's a season's ticket holder, and he enjoys he's gone to a lot of games. He said, man, I'm finding them. I'm starting to get frustrated watching them. Like he said, when the games like this, there are times where you look at this team and you say, there's just no way out. There's no way out. Yeah. And then the next game, you know, they have a 10-run inning, and you shake your head. I mean, that's kind of where this team is right now. A lot of talk on social media and on our text line. And again, 590, 590 is the text line. A lot of people want Bundesliga picks back. by the way. But the Bundesliga doesn't start till next weekend.
No.
So
that's why it wasn't in my deal either. Weekend. They didn't give me any money for that this year.
We got to do
pandemic
that.
And all that stuff, you know.
Well, your public demands it.
Yeah.
Your public demands Bundesliga picks.
All right.
So we'll have to start that at some point. Mm. So there's just a reminder. And that was, by the way, I'm not kidding. That was mentioned on the text line.
Huh.
So have been a couple of questions that didn't make sense, Jeff. There have also been a couple of questions. No, let it beat you. Mm. There have also been a couple of questions about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. sitting down with Bo, Tio, and Rowdy getting the off day. Now, again, folks need to know that the Jays put their players through tests. And I had Russ Martin explain this to me. Now, maybe it's different for catchers. Now, they put their players through strength tests. And there's a mark you have to hit.
Mm.
And if you don't hit that mark, you're going to grab some pine, even though it's not pine anymore, I don't think. But I'm going to say this about that. I had no problem giving Gurriel Jr. the day off. I know you have today off as well. John Gibbons used to do this, and I understand people really seem to be under the impression, and look, I love John Gibbons, but people really seem to be under the impression that he won 14 World Series
when
he was here.
Gibby would never do that when he was here. You hear that a lot.
Never give a guy.
Never.
He would do that all the time if you had an off day and you had a guy you'd ridden every day. And his response would be, well, it gives the guy a chance to, you know, first of all, it's not an off day. He's coming in the game to pinch hit. But it gives him a chance to get off his feet. This is a guy who's going to play every inning for the rest of the year, hopefully. So, Kevin, I had no problem with Gurriel Jr. sitting.
See,
I don't know how you felt.
I did. When you're at where you're at and you're in a playoff hunt and every one of these games matter the way they do, and you're with a young team, an inexperienced team in situations like this, and you have one of your hottest hitters who is not playing and you just lost Rowdy Tellez. Look, I have no idea what you're talking about, you know, how many squats you do, and that determines on whether you get to play or not. I have no idea about that. I just know.
I don't know if it's squat. I thought it was like a strength test or something.
I have no idea about that. I couldn't speak on that, but I can just see. But when you see the lineup that you see in the bottom of your order, the way it is, and you're one of your best hitters is not playing, you can understand why people that watch this team every single day the way the fans do can just wonder why that is the way it is. I just stopped thinking about it and watch who's playing.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll talk to Ned Colletti about that. He's the Dodgers analyst.
He should see this a lot, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll talk to Ned. He's going to join us at 10:30. We will have baseball tonight, by the way. The Dodgers and the Diamondbacks on Sportsnet 360 at 10 p.m. The Jays have today off. They start a series against the Mets tomorrow against Jacob DeGrom, and then they'll see Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo, he's got that 2.05 ERA.
Mm.
Damn, look at that. So we've covered the pitching, the Tanner Roark situation. We covered the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say Bo Bichette is back on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
What do you do with Jonathan VR? I know what I do right now.
You bench him.
Yep. I don't call it a benching.
Well,
no,
the issue you have with that is what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes is who's not in the lineup. He's here because of his offense. Everybody knew when Ross Atkins knew exactly what he was getting defensively, and I told you it's the first time I saw him. When they signed him is, you know, he doesn't move his feet all the time, and he's the sense of urgency when it comes to his defense is not always the greatest. And court awareness when he's on the bases, sometimes he thinks he's better than he is. That's what you're going to get. But offensively, lefty and righty, he brings a little bit. Right now, he's not doing that. But how do you keep it out of the lineup? Maybe he gets hot for four or five games and can start driving some baseball and getting some big hits. I don't know how you keep him out of the lineup with what you don't have in the lineup.
Well, I'm looking right now at on days when Guerrero doesn't DH, if you're asking me, would I rather have VR, Bichette, Biggio, or... I'm sorry. Would I rather have VR, Bichette, Biggio, or would I rather have Shaw, Bichette, Biggio? What would you rather go?
Okay,
with?
Last night they had Panic, VR, Joseph, Fisher, Davis. Bottom of your order, Jeff.
I don't
understand how you can keep him out of the lineup. You know, I don't like him defensively.
We saw one of Derek Fisher's tools, though, last night.
The ball jumps off his bat. If he can consistently figure out how to put barrel in baseball, it jumps off it. But that's the issue is, first of all, he didn't play enough. You know, the only way you're ever going to know if he's any good is to give him 250 at-bats in a row. But whose position is he going to take in the outfield? When everybody's healthy, who's he playing for?
What are you seeing from Randall Grichuk lately?
He's a 250 hitter. I've said this since day one. I know everybody's yelling and screaming about the new approach and getting the barrel in the hitting zone longer. Rod Crew used to tell me this all the time, and I'm going to say it again. You have 2,500 at-bats, normally you are what you are. You might start out hitting 320. If you're a 250 hitter, at the end of the season, you'll be a 250 hitter. What's he hitting now? In the 260s? He's about right around where he's at. You know, the only issue I had with his new approach is he hit 31-80 last year. Why are you rocking the boat? What's wrong with 260 and 30 and 80 every year he plays? That's the issue. He is a pull hitter for me. Right center to the left field line. If you start thinking about him finessing a ball to right field because he, you know, that can raise his average 20 points, I'd rather take that 20 points and throw it into four or five more homers. That's just me. Look, he's not a middle of the order bad. He is a fifth or sixth in the lineup when everybody's healthy. Question. He is not a 2, 3, or 4 in your order. He's just not that guy, right? He is.
All right, that was my next question.
Well, he's going to have to because of who's out. But when everybody's healthy, he's not hitting second or third in your lineup. He's just not that guy. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? You get a couple of guys on, and he goes 1-for-4 with a 3-run homer. And he hits 30 of those in a 162-game season. What's wrong with that? Yeah, they're trying to force things on people that they aren't. It's awesome that you want to go home and make these big changes and get the barrel in the hitting zone quicker. Look, I wanted to do all these things too, but I never hit 30 homers and drove in 80 at the big league level. That's good, Jeff. That's real good. Wouldn't you want to take that? How many years he signed? He's got like 3 years left. Take that. Throw that in the next 3 years. You wouldn't take that from Randall Grichuk?
I know 590-590 is a text line. And Marie from Ridgeway, and again, name and location is greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
Kevin, is there any other team successfully balancing analytics and old school with a manager who can make in-game decisions? Lots of them.
Your team has to be really good. I mean, the first one that pops into mind is the Dodgers, but they just overwhelm you with talent.
Right. The Astros, though. The Astros were very analytically heavy team.
The banging helped a lot. It's a thing. It's a thing. You're seeing hitters on that team that are not having the years they had before. You can yell and scream and say, come on, but numbers don't lie. So, you know, that may have something a little bit to do with it. Expectations and what they went through in the offseason, all these things. Show me 162 games of them doing what they did 2 years ago, and then, Jeff, you can come and talk to me. But I'm not saying there's anything wrong with analytics. They're doing it because it works.
Right.
But you take out Tanner Roark in a game with 18 games left in the season, even if they'd have left him in, he had like 60, almost 70 pitches. If he goes out and throws 15 or 16 in the fifth inning, he's coming out that inning anyway. He's not going out for another one. So you're only getting one more inning out of him.
And I've also got to say this, too. Ideally, when you bring a pitcher in, you want it clean. You don't want anybody on base. You want a clean situation.
Well, that's why they were getting Thomas Hatch. That's why they're getting Hatch up, because he is really good, you know, with all the power he has, and he's used to doing that. That's why they want to do him that way. They don't want to use him for three innings because they'd lose him for 3 or 4 days. So they want to use him for, like, they bring him in with two outs, get that out, go the next inning, and then he's only needing the day off. And then he can come back the next day and give you the next thing. So you're only giving him that one full day off, which makes sense.
But here's the thing, Marie. Yeah, there are a lot of teams that use analytics and have an old school approach. There are a lot of teams that do it now. The Rays do it. I'll tell you, people don't realize this. Now, the Yankees aren't having a good year right now, but the Yankees have more analytics people than the Jays do. People don't realize that.
Yeah.
And Brian Cashman has been general manager longer than just about anybody in the game right now. And they're all in on analytics. It's not just the Jays. I would argue that you can't find a team that isn't either analytics heavy or attempting to be analytics.
Yeah, Jeff, let me ask you a question. If they would have ran Tanner back out there for the next inning and say he gave up, you know, two walks and a three-run homer, how many people would be texting this show and saying, you know, how ridiculous it was for them to run him back out there? They knew better what he does third time through the order. That gets back to the, you know, you can't win scenario when you're a coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Yeah, it is true. You made a point very early in the show, very, very early in the show, that was 100% accurate. If Ross Stripling comes out and they go 1-2-3, we're not having this debate.
Nope.
Ned Colletti is former general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, longtime baseball executive. He's now studio analyst with, I believe it's Fox Sports LA. I'm going to probably get this wrong. He's a studio analyst for the Dodgers. Anyhow, it's one of our favorites. Ned Colletti will join us. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. We'll have the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks tonight on Sportsnet 360 because the Blue Jays have today off after their 7-2 loss to the New York Yankees last night. And the talking point, both on 590, 590, our text line and social media, was Tanner Roark's comments after the game. Not very happy with being pulled after four innings. We've heard that some of the starting pitchers haven't been thrilled with the manner in which they've been removed from games. That's the first time we've actually had a starting pitcher sort of come out and say it publicly. But look, we've had this discussion, right? Analytics are here to stay. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, why doesn't Charlie just go with his eyes? And, well,
because Charlie would be a minor league manager then. That's why.
Yeah, because Charlie likes his job. And yep. Charlie is, and I will say this, I'm willing to bet that as part of the interview process, it was made abundantly clear to Charlie Montoyo that this is the way it would be. Again, the buzzword around this front office has always been collaboration. Ned Colletti, Sportsnet LA's Dodgers analyst. He is, of course, former Dodgers general manager. He joins us on Baseball Central. Ned, thank you for doing this as always. We trust you're doing well. Look, this is an old debate, right? The impact of analytics on how a team is run, how a game is run. We know the Dodgers, like most teams, rely on analytics. Why do players continue to be surprised that analytics play a role in how they're used? Like, I get why Tanner Roark would be upset, but he can't be surprised because this is the way it's been done all year.
Well, it's you shouldn't be surprised, but doesn't mean you have to like it either. And I think for me, information is king, and you have to have as much information as possible as a decision maker. You're not really fulfilling your obligation as a leader if you don't take in all information, including analytics, but including who the people are and how the players play, how they think, how they sacrifice, how they work, do they work, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, both professionally and of character. And I think you take the mix of everything when you make your decisions. In-game, it's a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit probably more black and white for the analytical eye to say, well, somebody's done at this point in time. But, you know, you can never take the competitiveness out of an athlete. And when you do that, I think you're going to have conflict and you're going to have confrontation. To take the competitiveness out of somebody and say, this is where the end of the line is, even though you are pitching well, and I didn't see the games, I'm not really speaking about last night. But I think that you can't kind of have it both ways. And yeah, if you're going to expect competition from people, you're going to have some conversation where you differ.
Ned, you've been in front offices. How is it taken when front offices have given information about a certain pitcher and that coaching staff goes against what they suggest? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do they start not liking that? How's it taken?
Well, I can't really speak to that. When I was the assistant GM in San Fran for a decade, and then the GM down in LA for pretty much another decade, I had collaboration too, whether it was Joe Torre or Grady Little or Don Mattingly. We would talk about things, but I always put it in the hands of the manager. And if I disagreed with a move after, not really after the game, but maybe the next day, I'd say, hey, give me your thought process, just so I can understand the thought process. But, I did it a different way. I trusted the people that I hired to do the job. And they had information. Look, I'm known as an old-time guy and an old scout and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I developed the first analytics program for the Chicago Cubs like in the early 80s because of Jim Fry, our manager, who had coached for Earl Weaver. And I'm mentioning names now that you guys know, but most of the listeners are going, what's he talking about? Somebody from 100 years ago. But, they used analytics to an extent as far as matchups and different situational hitting, left and right, and all these different things. So I respect it, but I had a hard time taking the competition out of a player and taking the decision out of the manager's hands. And so, that's why I'm doing TV, I think, another general manager. We won a lot of games in both places. We've been to the postseason probably 70% of the time the last 20 years of my career. But, I hired managers to manage, and if I didn't believe in what they were doing, I had to switch them out after a long period of time. But, that's how I did it. But, so I can't answer the question. Long answer to a non-answer, I guess. Yep.
Joined by Ned Coletti on Baseball Central. We are now on, it's September 10th. We've got roughly 3 weeks left in the season, and then we're going to go into the playoffs in some form, Ned. I'm not going to knock on wood when I ask you this question, but how surprised are you that after a rather uncertain start in terms of COVID-19, in terms of testing, et cetera, how surprised are you that baseball seems to have, either through just pure luck or smart planning or a combination of both, kind of managed to build a little momentum now towards the end of the season? Are you surprised that it's been able to do that?
I wasn't sure what to expect, and certainly the early findings out of Florida were not promising. Certainly a few other teams that had a bit of a St. Louis, where they were about 15 games behind everybody, not in the standings, just in games played for different reasons. So I'm glad it did settle down. I think it's tough to get a lot of people to do the same thing. If you got 15 people sitting around that are your buddies, it's tough to get them all to do the same thing, let alone people scattered all over North America. So I'm glad it's working out the way it is, and I hope it continues. And as you get to the postseason, that's a really tough place to have somebody test positive and have a team sit out. How do you sit out in the postseason? How do you do that when teams are waiting to play other teams and you're running off out of calendar time? So hopefully it'll continue. I think people are paying attention. I think people are wiser for it. I know the Dodgers have taken this very serious right from the get-go, and they actually increased protocol independent of everybody. They just kind of said, hey, look, we have a chance to win, and we don't want anything happening to ourselves, our families, our friends, people that we do know, and we have a chance to win. So let's buckle down and let's do what we need to do. Let's do what the experts are telling us to do and kind of behave ourselves.
Ned, is this the best Clayton Kershaw that you've seen, and I'll give you the last 5 years?
I'd say probably the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
I think he's healthy. He hasn't always been healthy, and I've known him since he was 18, drafting him, and he's a tough guy to get off the mound, no matter what. It's tough to get him to pay attention to whatever's nagging him, and so I'm sure he went out there many times, not 100%, because of his competitive nature. This is the best I've seen him. His stuff is sharper. fastball's got a little bit more life to it. His slider, which has become a great pitch for him, has got a little bit more crispness to it. His curveball has developed great. Early in the year, he started working with a little bit of a changeup here and there. So I think he's healthier than he's been probably in 2-3 years. And I think the results reflect that too. He's got a chance to win another Cy Young.
Yeah. Do you think the shortened season, you know, he won't be tired going into the playoffs? Do you think we'll see the best Clayton in the playoffs we've ever seen?
Well, you know, he's had, you know, during my tenure, you know, he had a couple rough starts here and there, and then he had obviously a rough relief appearance last year. It pitched pretty good in between the two. You know, I don't know if the shortened season is going to make the playoffs any different for anybody. Tough to tell. I do know that, you know, if you're talking about work ethic, paying attention to detail, having talent and being able to execute it and understanding a hitter's swing and understanding all the dynamics of pitching, changing eye level and everything else, you're not going to find anybody better. You know, the results will be what the results are. As far as the process goes, and the process is really all you can control is your own process, you know, you should never get beat. Yeah. But we know that sometimes results and process are two different things.
Ned, you've seen the San Diego Padres. How far along the curve are the Padres, and how close are they to, you know, to maybe usurping the Dodgers in that division?
Well, they're a lot better. There's no doubt. And AJ Preller really, you know, put his foot on the gas even more at the deadline and made some good moves. They're far more talented than they've been. They've got maybe the best young player in the National League in Tatis Jr. They still have to execute. And, you know, I've seen them play a lot. They're no doubt they're better, and they're going to challenge, and they probably should have a pretty good October, although they do lack October type of experience, which does play a little bit of a role. I think that when you add a lot of different players, it doesn't mean that you're going to execute better. And I think that sometimes you'll see them make a mistake defensively or in thought process that only experience is going to smooth out. And so I think that they still have some of that to go. Talent, yeah. Pitching, yeah. You know, their bullpen has been a little bit up and down. But they're a much better club, and they are going to compete, and they are going to cause some teams trouble. Are they ready to challenge the Dodgers? I don't know if they're ready to challenge them quite yet. I believe in execution. I believe in playing the fundamentals of the game and really everything you can control, being really good at it. And sometimes you're going to have an error, no doubt, and that's part of life, part of the game. I think they still have a few more miles to go before they get that piece of it. They get that piece of it, yeah, they'll be able to compete with anybody. I don't know if they're there quite yet, though.
Ned, it was great of you to join us. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ned.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Be well. That is Ned Colletti, former Dodgers general manager, Giants assistant general manager, longtime baseball executive, now Dodgers analyst on Sportsnet LA, Mr. Barker.
Now, his answer about analytics seemed to make you think that they just give you an option. It's up to you as the manager and the pitching coach on whether you use it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you heard?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I would have to think that it varies from front office to front office. And frankly, look, it varies from manager to manager.
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with human beings. And I got to think your approach with Bruce Bochy, for example, or Dusty Baker, for example, would be different than your approach with Charlie Montoyo.
Yeah.
Or Aaron Boone. Different people.
Yeah.
But it was funny hearing Ned talk about you know, being involved in the Cubs dipping their toes in analytics. And he did make a great point. Like, people need to realize Earl Weaver was using analytics long before anybody else was using it. Like, we're talking the 70s. They didn't call it analytics at the time. Davey Johnson was the first manager I saw that had a book with him in the dugout that had breakdowns and went a little more in depth besides, well, this guy hits lefties good, this guy hits righties good. It went in a little more detail. So it's been around for a while where it wasn't talked about. And I guess what has happened now is and this would be a really good talking point, frankly, to be a good article to write at some point. How much old school is actually left in the game, Kevin? How much, and I'm not talking about the unwritten rules. I'm talking about, okay, how much old school is left in the game?
The eye test is what you're saying, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Use your eyes instead of what's on a piece of paper.
How that, much is every kind of catcher? Every catcher has arm,
sure.
has things in their arm now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just wonder if maybe we need to just not have the discussion anymore because it is what it is. Yeah. Analytics aren't only here to stay. Analytics are running the game.
Well, they're the reason why the Rays can be good every single year. It really is.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a reason why you yell and scream about the Tampa Bay Rays is because of analytics.
Yep. 590-590 is the text line. We'll get back to it. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, Barker, I got a question for you. How do you feel about the cardboard cutouts?
I love them. I wish I had one.
Okay. Jason LaRue reached out on Twitter.
Okay.
A question for you and Barker. I was listening to Kevin Kiermaier's interview on Jason Stark's podcast. He mentioned that the cardboard cutouts made it hard to pick up the bat off the ball or the ball off the bat. He also said that Buffalo and Atlanta were the worst because of the number of cutouts behind home plate.
Yeah.
Does this make a significant home field advantage for the Jays? Could it explain some of the curious fielding errors we've seen from both Jays and opponents' outfielders, Jason from Wingham? Okay, I want to talk about this. Because here's the thing. As someone who played a ton in minor league ballparks,
yeah,
minor league backdrops aren't always conducive to hit. Like you've talked about, you got me thinking about guys who put up good numbers in the minors.
Yeah, hitting the dark.
And you're hitting in the dark. You're playing in crappy times.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have the perfect hitter's eye. We talked about the one in Buffalo, right? How players said the scoreboard was so low and you couldn't pick you couldn't pick up the a curve if a guy threw it high.
Nope.
I mean, all this stuff, people can roll their eyes. All of it's legit. Yep. It matters to hitters. Let me ask you about those cutouts. I have wondered about that as well.
I'm going to say I find that hard to believe that a Bo Bichette or a Kevin Biggio, if that was the case, would not go to whoever and yell and scream about them moving that. If that was an issue and they could not see the ball off the bat and whatever it is, or
maybe they're
any outfielder whatsoever,
but
any rumblings of that at all with what the Blue Jays as an organization have went through to make that field as up to par as they can possibly do it, I find that hard to believe. Now, again, I'm not on the field. I have not had a chance to go there and look at that because obvious reasons. But I still would find that hard to believe. As outspoken as Bo Bichette is that's an issue with any teammate of his whatsoever, that he would not raise his hand and go, hey, somebody needs to do that. Fix that real quick.
That's fair.
And Kiermaier, look, you're 220 hitter, you're a 220 hitter, maybe.
Yeah, but he's talking about defensively as well. He's not talking about offense. He's talking about defense.
Tropicana Field's the hardest place to catch fly balls in on the planet.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So, you know.
That is true.
It's one guy yelling and screaming about that. That has nothing to do with the Yankees pitchers having issues seeing fingers put down. None. So, yeah, you know.
All right. Man. Yeah, that gets under your...
You know,
Major leaguers whine, do you?
Yeah, because I played forever in the minor leagues and tried to do anything possible to get to the big league level. You think anybody cared whether there was a good batter's eye in the minor leagues? No chance. They would have laughed at me if I'd have said, hey, could you put something dark on that scoreboard for me? Because I can't see a curveball out of that right-handed pitcher's hand. Just a saying.
What was the worst minor league ballpark you played in for whatever reason? The batter's eye,
the Toledo Mudheads old stadium was atrocious. And Joe Siddle can can back me up on this. The batter's box at that, and I think you had to walk through the stands to get to the field, which was just awful. You know, my last name's Barker. I caught a lot of hate in the minor leagues because of that. Yeah. So it was not that I cared. The older I got, I thought it was funny and I'd make fun of people. But that place, because of the batter's box, because I was about hitting. The only way I was going to the big leagues is because I could hit. And if I wasn't comfortable in the batter's box where I stood, and there was big giant holes in that batter's box, and I was always having to move or stand on the corner of it, and when I turned and I would fall in the hole, and it would just irritate me a lot. It took little things. You know, the older you get, the ornery you get. I'm sort of like you.
What bothered you more? Crappy field, crappy clubhouse in the minors.
I didn't care about the clubhouse. All of them, most of them were crappy when I was coming up. Now, towards the end of my career, they were real nice. You know, they build new stadiums in AAA. A lot of those AAA stadiums, I played in Louisville, Kentucky. That AAA stadium is the best ever. The Indianapolis Stadium for the Pirates, that place is tremendous. Huge clubhouses. They were really nice. Two clubhouse guys. So, you know, towards the end,
Jimmy John's nearby.
I'm sure there was. If there was, I was finding one.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was, you know, those little things like that didn't bother me. It was more about the batter's box because it was all about – that's the only way I was going to big leagues is if I was hitting. I had to change. I had to turn eyes because of that. So when the batter's box wasn't right, it made me mad.
And that's – but that's the main thing.
That was the batter's box. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the most –
I always think of you every time I hear guys.
Yeah, well, just think about what they had to do to get Buffalo up to par for a big league stadium. Think about what minor leaguers have to go through just to perform well enough on a consistent basis to make it to the big leagues. I mean, and not everybody's first rounders. There's first rounders, and there's everybody else. Everybody else has to hit, catch, run right. So, yeah, it's... You know, I don't want to woe is me, but that, you know, that's life.
Andrew from Saskatoon got a couple of hashtags going. Free Charlie, and his other hashtag is make a baseball decision.
I would assume that he likes being a big league manager.
Yeah,
it's better than him getting full reign to do whatever he wants to do in AAA.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to say that right now.
You've got all the freedom you want in AAA.
That's right.
Including freedom to sit in the second row of the bus if you want for the 7-hour bus ride. All right, Barker, thanks for doing this. We'll be back again tomorrow. I rest assured we will be back again tomorrow.
Yes.
Writer's Block with Richard Deitch is next. Don't go anywhere.